today on Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk. I'm your host, Dr. James Dobson. On today's program, I want you to hear a special presentation from a man who's become a great friend of mine, has been for many years, and I have great respect for him. Bob Vernon is an author, a speaker, and a consultant, but during his distinguished career in law enforcement, Bob served in leadership for the Los Angeles Police Department, providing oversight for 7,800 police officers and 3,000 more civilians. Now, what we're going to hear today is part two of the presentation we aired yesterday. And it is more information about what his life was like in leadership of the police department. He tells a lot of stories. He's a very good speaker. You're going to enjoy hearing the rest of this presentation.
Let me just give you a couple recent opportunities that I've had because of my position. I was asked to come back to Chicago just a few weeks ago. We went back to Chicago, and people on the North Shore of Chicago, which is kind of like the Bel Air, Brentwood, Beverly Hills area out here, they had organized a group of executives for a couples club dinner. And it was held at the very fashionable Winnetka Women's Club in Winnetka, right near the Percy Mansion. And so we went there, and just before I got up to speak, this guy who organized it came up and he said, Bob, he said, I thought I'd just tell you this. I've never seen as many millionaires and presidents of corporations gathered under one roof in my life. He says, there's 250 men out there, and most of them are millionaires. I said, thanks a lot. You know, I just came up to speak. But I was privileged to be able to speak to these men as a deputy chief from the Los Angeles Police Department, and of course, I was invited to speak to them about social issues of today, about pornography, about narcotics, about many issues that are on their minds today that concern them, and they're looking for answers, and they want answers. And of course, I addressed those problems. I talked very specifically about some of those problems and gave them some very, what I think are practical answers. But I also gave them my reasons for those practical answers. And I concluded by telling them my personal relationship with God and telling them that I think the basic answer to all of these issues are found in a proper relationship with God and following His commands and His way of living. And that night, 50 of those top presidents and vice presidents of corporations came forward and registered a first-time commitment to Jesus Christ. And I say to God, why me, Lord? Thank you. Well, let me conclude by giving you the three-point verse message that led me along the way and that makes my life worth living and that makes life an exciting adventure for me every day. And it's found in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And you'll notice, as you look in that verse, that there are three prerequisites and then a promise. And the three prerequisites go like this. Number one, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Okay, let's talk about that for just a minute. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. That's the first prerequisite to being placed in a position of being guided by God. You see, the promise is, and He shall direct your paths. You see that at the end of the verse, of verse 4? But the first prerequisite is, number one, trust in the Lord with all your heart. I imagine most of you sitting here tonight think, well, you know, at least I've got that one going for me. But let's talk about that for a minute. You know, that's more than simple intellectual assent or simple belief. And I think that the reason a lot of people today do not feel the presence of God in their life, do not really know Him personally, even though they believe in Him, is that they haven't taken that belief to the point of commitment. They haven't trusted in the Lord with all their heart. Most Americans believe in God. You get in conversation with the average American. I was talking with one of my colleagues at work just Friday, and he was a little bit depressed about life after death. He said, I don't believe there's any. And I said, well, do you believe in God? Well, of course, yes, I believe in God. And he sincerely believes in God. But he told me, he said, but I wish I had the faith that you have. He said, I don't have it. I said, well, you could. It's just a matter of your will, of taking that step of faith. And he said, well, I can't for some reason yet. He said, my wife wants me to, but not yet. I can't. And so there is a difference between belief and trust. I remember the situation where we had to raid the Panther headquarters at 41st and Central. And we organized a group of men, and we knew that we had to get six men to take with them what we call the key to the city. The key to the city is a battering ram, about that long, and about that big around, made out of solid lead. Can you imagine how heavy it is? That's why we need six men to carry it. It's that big around, that long. It has three handles on each side. The reason we call it the key to the city is that it opens any door. And so we had to get six men to take that battering ram, and we felt certain we would have to use a battering ram, and have them, if in case we did have to force entry. We knew that the front door had sandbags behind it with automatic weapons, and we had warrants of arrest commanding us to go there. The Superior Court commanding Los Angeles Police Department to serve these warrants. And so we went with a group of men. Six men took this battering ram and were standing by in case they needed it. And of course, we very legally let them know we were there. We said, police officers, we have warrants for your arrest, open in the name of the law and all that kind of good stuff, you know. I did it all legal and proper, and we were met, instead of an open door, a pipe bomb came out of the second story window and exploded right alongside the officer with a bullhorn that was giving the command. He picked up a little shrapnel and moved to one side. Then we brought up the men with the battering ram. Now, these men knew that there was an automatic weapon on the other side of that front door. They knew that. But they had put on bulletproof vests under their coveralls. They were what we call a SWAT team. And they had these bulletproof vests. Now, I've seen those bulletproof vests demonstrated at our academy. I believe them. I believe in them. But these men trusted them. And you see, there's a big difference. You can stand and very impersonally watch someone fire a gun at that bulletproof shield against the embankment at the academy, against the sandbankment right there, and you can see the bullet ricochet off. You can go up and examine it and say, you know, it didn't penetrate. Hey, that's great. And you can believe. But to really trust one of those, you'd have to do something like these six men did. They put them on, and they went through a door that they knew had an automatic weapon on the other side. They knew they would take some gunfire. Now, that is trust. That's also a lot of courage. And these six men took the battering ram, they hit the door went down, and sure enough, you can see it in the photos we took, an automatic weapon opened up on them. And the first two guys took a burst of gunfire. They had on the bulletproof vest, so they didn't get hit in a vital area, but it knocked their legs out from under them. The other men went to the side and tried to pull him out of the way, and as they were pulling them out of the way, a third officer was hit with a burst of gunfire, three officers wounded. One officer had a piece of bone about 3 inches literally knocked out of his leg by the automatic machine gun. We had to retire him because he never was right after that. But you see, these officers demonstrated their faith in this life-saving device, the bulletproof shield. Now, I imagine that most of you, if I had it up here on the platform, would believe it if I demonstrated and say, look, see, it deflects a bullet. You believe? Yeah, I believe. How many would like to put it on and let me shoot at you? You see, there's a difference. There's a difference. And it's that way with God. A vast majority of Americans believe in God. Thinking people believe in God. I was talking with Ken Poor, a friend of mine. He said, I just had a conversation with a guy and says, I don't believe in God. And Ken says, great. The guy looked at him kind of surprised. And he was standing, Ken is kind of a car nut. In fact, he used to be a used car salesman. And he was standing next to this Dodge Charger. And he says, by the way, you see that Charger? And the guy said, yeah. Ken said, guess where it came from? And the guy said, I don't know. And he said, it just oozed up out of the pavement. And the guy said, come on. And he said, what do you mean, come on? And the guy says, well, you know, everybody knows that that comes from Detroit. And Ken said, right on. Everybody knows that a car demands one thing, that there somewhere is a car maker. And people in the world and the universe tells us one thing. Somewhere there's a people maker and a world maker. And a universe maker. And he said, that's why I said congratulations when you said I don't believe in God, because he said, you know what, you have a lot more faith than I do. Think of that for a minute. To have faith that everything came from nothing and that intelligence came from non-intelligent matter, that takes a lot of faith. So the big question is, do you have faith or not? The question is, who do you have faith in? So most people believe in God, but how many have taken it to the point of commitment? Second prerequisite, number two, lean not unto your own understanding. Don't depend on yourself to figure things out for your life. You know, I was going to figure it all out. God, I'll go into the Air Force. I'll let them train me. I'll become a jungle pilot. You know, I'll do all these things. And God, I've got it all planned. That you just kind of endorse it, if you will, and I'll carry on with my business. And God said, that's not what I got planned. You know, I'm glad that he let me know what he wanted me to do. Because now that I know more about myself, now that I've lived with myself a few years more, I know that I'm in the job that I really enjoy the most. Commit your way to the Lord, and he'll give you the desires of your heart, the Word of God says. Lean not unto your own understanding. I was working with a partner that we worked the felony car together for several years, and we rolled on an emergency call one afternoon where a woman had been very viciously beaten and robbed and raped. She needed ambulance care immediately, and as we pulled up, another radio car pulled up, and we were in a plainclothes car, but it was one of those kind where everybody knows who you are, you know, with the aerials and all that. And so as we pulled up, the other officers pulled up and they said, look, we'll get her to the hospital. Why don't you guys take off? The guy went that way around the corner. We said, all right. So we took off down the street. It's another one of those deals where people are pointing and all that, you know. So it ended up about three blocks away in a motel. And we went up to the motel owner and identified myself. And I said, we're looking for a guy that fits this description. I had it all written out. She said, well, we have two. We have one over number two and one over number 38. That both of them fit that description. I said, well, okay, thank you very much. So I went back, told my partner. He said, well, let's hit two first. I said, all right. So we went to the front door, and I looked in the front door, and we were going to deploy around the house where my partner went in the back door. But before we could get that far, the front door was open, and he saw us. And he was standing in the kitchenette portion of the motel, and we could see everything but his hands. And he was the guy. So before he could get a chance to get his gun or anything, I just unbuttoned my coat, and I pulled my gun from my shoulder holster, and I pulled out my badge in this hand, and I stepped into the living room, and I said, police officer, freeze. And usually, when you do that with a .357 Magnum, you know, usually they just freeze. But this guy, instead of freezing, you got to get the picture now. He's standing in the doorway, and couldn't see his hands. And as soon as I said, police officers, freeze, he just moved after something, and all I could see was his foot. And then I could see his weight shifting back, and I knew he was coming back. And of course, you figured out probably the same thing I did. He got his gun, he's coming back after me. And so I went into a crouch position, combat position, and I began to put pressure on the trigger. I was going to fire as soon as he came around the side of the door. My partner, in the meanwhile, had slipped in behind me, and he could see more of the guy than I could. He had a better angle. And he saw me with my gun out, and of course he had his gun out too, but I heard him yell just as I began to put pressure on the trigger. Bob, hold it! And right in that fraction of a second, I had a decision to make. Follow my own intellect, follow everything that I knew was right through my training and everything. I knew this guy was armed. I knew he was after his gun. He's coming back. He's going to shoot me, and my partner's telling me not to shoot. Well, thank God I didn't shoot. Because, you see, this wasn't even the man. He was up in Department 38. We later arrested him, by the way, so don't worry, ladies. He's all taken care of. But this man was not the man. He fit the description, but he was standing in his kitchenette peeling a potato. And when a strange man with a gun stepped into his room, pointed a gun at him, it kind of frightened him. And that potato, ladies, you know how it is sometimes, the starch substance kind of gets all over it when you're peeling it. And he kind of flinched, and it shot out of his hand like a bar of soap, you know? And he went after that potato as a reflex. Because you see, later I asked him, I said, why in the world did you make a quick, what we call in police jargon, a furtive movement after that potato when you knew I told you to freeze? He said, officer, I didn't even think. He said, man, that potato went. He said, my body went after it. Before I even thought about it. Well, the principle there is, and what I'm trying to illustrate, and what I think the Word of God is saying here, is God is in a position to see more of the situation than we can. He says, lean not into your own understanding. Trust him. Everything may look reasonable to you to take some action. But if he says no through his word, and of course to know his guidance, in order to lean on his understanding, you're going to have to know this word. And you got a good break coming to this church. You'll know this word. And the more you know this word, the more you get to know God, the more you'll know what his guidance really is. And listen carefully now. Watch this. Once in a while, in fact, quite often you'll find that your own rationale and this guidance from this word will conflict. It'll be different. Just like my intellect and Nick's telling me to hold it, there was a conflict there. He's telling me not to shoot. Everything I know tells me to shoot. But the rationale here is, lean not at your own understanding. God can see more of the situation than you can. He's in a better position. He's a creator of the universe. It may not make sense at the time, but you'll thank God later on. I like that. And finally, and the last prerequisite, in all your ways, acknowledge him. And of course, that's the opposite of ignoring him. You come to him and you bring him in on the plan. You tell him when you've got a decision. You let him in on it. You say, now, Lord, I don't know what school I'm going to go to, and I really need your guidance. You bring him in on it. You know, sometimes I have to utter very quick prayers in law enforcement. I was down at USC at the beginning of the summer session here several years ago. I was a young sergeant, and they have a tradition. The first real hot day, they wet everybody, and they wet one another on Frat Road, on 28th Street, right there. And this was several years ago, and I got a radio call to meet one of my units, one of the radio car officers, and they were there, and they said, oh, something terrible's going on. I said, what's that? And they said, well, you know, the kids wet each other every year. And I said, yeah. Well, this year, they're not only wetting one another, but they're wetting anybody that drives down that street. And this just happens to be a lady that was going to the USC clinic there, and she's pregnant, and they threw this 5-gallon can of water in the right in the window. It got all over. Her husband swerved, being frightened, had a slight collision with the car. They had to rush her to a hospital. She's giving birth right now. We hope that the baby's okay. But, you know, this has got to stop. This is causing problems. I said, oh, boy, we got to stop it. Huh. I knew there were hundreds of kids out there. And so I called every unit that was clear. I think there were about 7 units clear. I had them all meet me there. We're around the corner. And I took one officer with me, the biggest, baddest officer I could find. Now I picked him. I said, you're going to watch over me, and you're going to get on that radio if I need help, okay? And he said, yes, sir. So we got in the car together, and I said, the rest of you guys, when we ask for you, you come around fast. But I began praying. Not out loud. I didn't want everybody to think I was a nut, you know, but just right there in my mind, I just started saying, God, you know, I'm going to need wisdom on this one. And, you know, lay it on me, Lord. I need it. And just as I was rounding the corner, a plan came into my mind. Well, the first part of the plan was don't go in there with a big armed force of guys with helmets and nightsticks and all that, you know. Probably have a big confrontation. So I took one officer. That was part of the plan. I rounded the corner, and as I was rounding the corner, the second part of the plan came into the view. Look, these guys are having fun, right? Right? Why not make it kind of funny? Don't come on too serious. Come on humorous. And so I rounded the corner, and you could hear all these cat calls and, whoa, here comes the pigs and the fuzz and all that. So I got out, and they all came up, and they had all this water, and they're ready to wet me. And I said, okay, I said, I know, it's my turn to get wet. But before I get wet, I'd like to talk to take me to your leader. I come in peace. You know, I held up my hand. Being funny, instead of saying, all right, you guys, you know. So I said, you know, take me to your leader. So they did. They walked me over to a guy, and they got a guy, and they put him up with a towel around his head like a turban, you know, and they said, this is our leader. And so I walked up, and he said, what would you like to say? I'd like to say a few words before you pronounce sentence upon me. And man, they really thought that was funny. And so I said, I had to shout. I didn't have a microphone. I said, you know that this street is your street. And a big cheer went up. You know, there are about 300 of them out there. Big cheer went up. And I said, the Los Angeles Police Department knows this is your street. And a bigger cheer went up. No. I said, but these poor citizens don't know it isn't your street. Boo, you know, big boo. And then I said, seriously, gentlemen. And I went into the story of what happened with the lady that was pregnant coming to the clinic. And suddenly everything became very quiet. And I said, you've had some fun, but you've just caused a problem. And I'm going to ask you to go back into your houses and stop the fun. And I got off the platform and I walked back to the car expecting any moment a big blast of water to hit me. But you know, it never did. I got back in the car and I still expected something to happen. I was afraid to look back. We drove off and I looked in the rearview mirror. And as I looked in the rearview mirror, all I could see were people going back into fraternity houses. And I said, thanks, Lord. It's a good plan. You see, he says, in all your ways, acknowledge him. Take that moment to bring him in on the plan and say, Lord, I need your help. You know, the Lord loves to hear people say help, to admit that they need him. He loves that. And the promise is, now here's the whole real message tonight. If you don't get anything, get this. If you fulfill these three prerequisites, he doesn't promise to reveal his detailed plan for your life to you, but he does promise you one thing. It says, and he shall direct your paths. He doesn't say, I'll let you know what it is. I'll let you know what you're going to be doing 5 years from now, or I'll let you know what I want you to be. He doesn't say that. He just says, I'll direct you. In other words, get this now. This was revolutionary to me when I first grasped a hold of this thought. If you do these first three things, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean unto your understanding. In other words, follow His rules. In all your ways, acknowledge Him. Bring Him in on a plan. It says, in effect, what it says is, you won't be able to be out of His will. Don't expect a note from heaven with a brick, you know. Don't expect an angel in the middle of the night. What He says here, if you do these three things, you will be in My will, whatever you do. You won't be able to get out of it. In short, God will literally guide your paths. The Creator of the universe. And that's exciting. People today, as psychologists, as business leaders, as governmental leaders across this nation are saying, people are living harder and enjoying it less. Deep depression is afflicting more today than ever before. The sale of tranquilizers continues to go up. And you want to know something? One of the reasons is that they don't have any purpose, any real reason for being here on planet Earth. And I was talking to a young man just this last week who reached the zenith of his wildest dreams. And he says, now that I'm here, I'm depressed. I said, you're depressed? He said, yeah, where else is there to go? I've reached it. He said, it's all downhill from here. He said, it's just getting old and dying, man, and there's nothing after death. The guy was depressed. Let me tell you something. When you can feel and sense and know that you literally are doing what the very Creator of this universe wants you to do, you don't get depressed. It's exciting. When you're in God's will, there's just really nothing like it. Oh, you have problems. Certainly. Nowhere in the Bible does it say when you join God's forever family, all the problems cease. But He gets you through the problems victoriously. I'm going to ask you to bow your heads as we conclude tonight. I feel compelled to offer an opportunity for anyone who has really never taken their belief to the point of commitment to join the family tonight. And I'm going to do it a little differently tonight. You know, you don't have to sign anything to join His family. You don't have to go through any ecclesiastical exercise of any type. You can take that initial step of faith, that first prerequisite, trusting in the Lord with all your heart. You can take it right where you sit. You can take that great leap of faith right in the privacy of your own heart. And I'm going to ask that all over this auditorium, those that are here tonight that are in a position of perhaps always believing in God, or at least having a sneaking suspicion He's there, but never taking that to the point of commitment, we're going to give you that opportunity tonight to take this first step toward really recognizing and realizing God's will and great plan for your life. And all it takes on the authority of God's Word is for you to invite Him into your life. The Bible says in John 1:12, but as many as received Him, speaking of Jesus Christ, to them gave He power to become the sons of God. You don't have to join this church. You don't have to go through anything else, really, except what the Bible says. But as many as received Him, to them gave He the power to become the sons of God. For by grace are ye saved, through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God. It's a step of faith. Another verse. But God commended His love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Jesus Christ died for us. And so all it takes is that step that I took, and I remember the day, I remember the moment, I remember kneeling in the basement of a church and saying to God these three things, and this is what I encourage you to say right where you sit. Number one, God, I admit that I'm a sinner. You know, that wasn't too hard for me. I knew I was a sinner, and I think you do too. Secondly, I believe that Jesus Christ, your Son, died for me. And thirdly, right now, I receive Him into my life. I ask Jesus Christ to come into my life and take over this life. I commit my life to Him. I take my belief to the point of commitment. Let me suggest to you right where you sit that you go through these three basic steps and utter that first prayer to God. Number one, right now, tell Him that you know you're a sinner. Okay, number two, tell Him that you believe that Jesus Christ, His Son, died for you. Number three, invite Him into your life. Take that belief to the point of commitment. Express your faith, your trust in Him by turning your life over to Him.
This is James Dobson again, and that's how my friend Bob Vernon concluded his presentation on the topic, God's Direction in My Life. If you missed part one of that presentation, which we aired yesterday, or part two, concluding that message, you can hear both of them by going to drjamesdobson.org, and it's available to you there. I'm glad you joined us today. Tomorrow we're going to hear about raising healthy kids, featuring Dr. Gary Sibsey and Dr. Tim Clinton, and that will be part one. Part two will be on Friday. Don't forget to join us then.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.